Hello there, my name is Laura Tyler and I'm the communications intern at Retina UK. Today's topic is the professions within the sight loss community and what they do. There are many professionals that can help people along their sight loss journey. Perm is going to talk about that today. With that in mind, do you want to introduce yourself, Perm?
Yes. My name is Perm. I actually work for a local sight loss charity based within the West Midlands area. It's based in the community. And mm-hmm. I actually do a lot of different areas to my role. And I also actually help and also deliver a sight loss course in conjunction with the RNIB. And I actually do a general overview of the services that we provide at the local charity and what is available regionally and also locally.
Fantastic. Okay, and am I right in thinking that you're living with an eye condition yourself?
I am indeed. I have got a condition called retinal dystrophy and I've just been recently diagnosed last year with the defective gene of Usher's 2A. And my condition is genetic. Both my parents are carriers. So it's come out of me through routine eye examination. And it was found that I had swelling at the back of the eye. And then I was actually rushed, absolutely prompted to go to the hospital. That was at the local hospital in the Midlands. And that's where they found out. Various tests were done. That's when they found out. A few weeks later, conclusion that I had a genetic inheritable dystrophy, retinal dystrophy. So yes, and it's affected peripheral vision, central vision, and I also suffered, this year with a condition which is affiliated called Charles-Bonnet syndrome. So I have amazing hallucinations of teacups, of flying saucers, orbs, stroke lights. Some people can find it very disturbing, but mine are actually quite humorous, so I just kind of get used to it. So that's me in a nutshell.
So what exactly is your profession? What's its title, and is there anything else that it involves that you haven't mentioned thus far?
Okay, I actually am information, advice and guidance coordinator for a local sight loss charity, and I actually have been there for just over a year. And I thoroughly enjoy and absolutely love my job and the difference that we are making. It's all person-centered approach. Mm-hmm. It's also to do with, making lives better. Because with having a visual impairment myself, if you don't have the knowledge or that support, it's very difficult to access services, which we'll be talking about in a moment.
Yes. That leads quite nicely into the next question, which is with the professionals within the sight loss community, as was said previously, there are many abbreviations which can be a bit confusing for people. Are there any in particular which you think would be the most important to mention here?
There are three different professionals which actually sit either within the community or within the hospital setting. But the first one I would like to mention are what they're called ECLOs, Eye Care Liaison Officers. They weren't around when I was first diagnosed, so they are situated in the local hospitals and we have a few across our area, but they are nationwide. And sometimes ECLO services can be based within the community. It just depends on if they have a rural setting for hospitals. But they are actually there to bridge the gap between the clinicians and also the patient. So when a patient is first diagnosed, there is that clinical pathway that the consultants and our medical professionals will follow. But people forget, even though you look at the physical diagnosis, the emotional impact that it has on an individual. And understanding what it actually means to have a certificate of visual impairment, what they call a CVI, and they could register either sight impaired, which is partially sighted, or severely sight impaired, which is blind. And that emotional trauma and the actual kind of, overwhelming of how this is going to affect my life, it's actually important to have that ECLO there. The eye care liaison officers are normally within the clinic setting or in the rural community, and they will actually be there to support the individual personal patient to understand what it actually means, and they will talk them through the CVI process. So there's a certification by the consultant, and only the consultant ophthalmologist would be allowed to certify an individual patient who meets the criteria for acuity and also peripheral vision. And then the ECLOs will then speak to them and talk to them and actually maybe signpost them to other services that would actually be within the remit of the area. And that could be, you know, trying to access, you know, support with finances, what a person might be entitled to if you're sight impaired or severely sight impaired. The ECLO's roles are so crucial, because when I was diagnosed, we didn't have any ECLOs, and I was given a load of leaflets with a lot of medical jargon and not understanding how this was going to affect my life. It had an ECLO been there, I would have been taken to one side and spoken to on a one-to-one and explained exactly what the process would have been. So it's crucial. The emotion and holistic approach has to be there. You have the clinical pathway, like I explained, but you also need to marry the two together, which is absolutely important. So emotional and physical do come hand in hand. And for some people, you know, it's a shock, denial, five stages of grief. The first thing is, why me? And the biggest thing that you might find that people are traumatized is that they have their licenses taken off because they don't meet the licensing criteria. And that is another, you know, kind of support that is there. The ECLOs are really important. They do actually speak to internal agencies as well. And also there are other services that are available, like low vision within the hospital setting, but the ECLO will be the next go-to person. And it's also understanding what CVI actually means. So that is what their role is in the first initial diagnosis.
Yeah, I think that's really important.
I think it's absolutely important, as you said, Laura, that when you actually talk about saying it doesn't really matter whether you've had it from birth, middle stage in life or later on in life, the expectations are the same. It's managing and having a realistic and compassionate approach. Because sometimes, you know, as you know, everything is so overwhelmed at the moment. But people need that individual one-to-one, that human approach. And also, you know, if they are struggling to come to terms with their sight, counselling might be another avenue that the ECLOs can refer on to as well. And organisations that might have it within the community that they can access. Sometimes it can be done online. And we are going back face to face now as to where I'm situated, which is really, really important. And any pathways that people follow, that's what the ECLO role is for. And it's important. And it's also good to actually see the ECLO service grow. So they will have contact not only within the hospital settings, but also other social kind of social services that they might tap into that would be available. So it's absolutely crucial. It's that mapping and that directing which is really important for the individual. Yeah. So not left, pardon the phraseology, you know, to manage it themselves. So which is really, really important. And it could be just, you know, seeing what activities they could do. They might not be able to, you know, kind of engage in their sports, carry on their hobby. And it's little things like that that can make a difference, and see what amenities would be available and activities are available. And people might find it hard to navigate their phones. They might find it hard to navigate technology, because technology is a way forward, especially from a personal point of view. If I didn't have technology and that support with the local charity or with the ECLO service, I would have been lost, to be honest, really lost, because that was one way in COVID in connecting with the community, which was absolutely crucial.
On to the next point then. So we've mentioned ECLOs. Are there any other abbreviations that you think are important?
Yes, there are. So there's the other one is ROVI, R-O-V-I, Rehabilitation Officer for the Visually Impaired. Now, ROVIs are actually qualified professionals that have spent either doing a 3-year degree or a postgraduate qualification. and they are there to support people. There's two kind of tiers to their role. They are actually based within the sanctuary team of the local authority. So for us, it would be our local authority in the Midlands, and you will have a sanctuary team, and they are situated. So there's the morbidity and orientation element, mm-hmm. and there's also the daily living. Now, a lot of people who are new to sight loss, obviously they're overwhelmed with everything that's going on. They might have like got significant sight loss, either one or both eyes, but they can access the services. So once they have a certificate of visual impairment, with the permission of the patient, they will then be sent on to the local authority to be registered. So there's two parts of the CVI process. So once they're certified from the consultant ophthalmologist, they will then actually have a referral going to the local authority. That is actually, it's optional, it's not compulsory, but even if a patient isn't registered with a visual impairment but are experiencing sight loss, they can still do a self-referral to the local authority. Now, morbidity and orientation is actually using a cane. There's different types of canes that you would use. And if you are embarking on using a long cane, it's always best to have professional training, because there are techniques that you would use. The cane is actually measured to the person's height, and also if they have any mobility issues in their hands, because you know, when you use a cane, you have to use a sweeping motion going across, doing like inner shoreline, outer shoreline as you're trained, and the rehab officer is there to actually show you how you would detect edges of pavements, looking at how to detect, you know, like bushes. So this is absolutely important, and also how to walk in a straight line. Quite often I used to find myself, even though I had residual vision, I was veering off to the left. If I went to the right, I ended up in the road. It's also detecting any dangers or obstacles that might be in the way, such as bins. Bins are a speciality of mine. I absolutely loathe them. So when it is bin day in the area, guess what I'm confronted with time and time again is bins. But the cane itself is also there as a safety to raise awareness that you have a visual impairment, and also the fact that, you know, you're going to cross the road safely, so you're not going to end up having a mishap or a near miss, which a lot of people do. And again, it's acceptance of using the cane. There's different types of canes, and there's also a white cane with red strips for dual sensory loss. Again, that's to denote you have a dual sensory impairment as well. The other parts to their role is actually looking at your daily living. So it could be things that you're starting to struggle with, for example, like maybe making a cup of tea, and also you're finding it hard to chop your vegetables, because somebody could have had a stroke and their mobility and dexterity has gone in their hands. There are equipment that would be used, but they would look at the person-centered approach. So they will actually do an assessment. So you might want, I don't know, to make a cup of tea without burning yourself and overfilling the cup. So they would advise maybe a liquid level indicator and show you how to use it. There are different potato peeling implements as well. So one could be for carrots, one could be for tomatoes, and one could be for potatoes. And those would be good for, and they're very ergonomic, so they could be good for your hands. There are also different chopping boards, which will have a spike on them. So if somebody has got mobility issues, they can actually put the potato on this spike, color coordinated chopping board, and then actually start using the actual technique and be shown how to use it safely. The other thing as well, lighting is a mitigating factor to everyone who's got a visual impairment, and it depends on the time of year. And sometimes you would be given like a little task lamp to use in the kitchen. And it's absolutely helpful, especially if you're doing close work. Some people find that bright lights are too much, so it has an adverse effect. And they also make recommendations that you can actually use, like your washing machines. If you don't have like smart devices or appliances, they might give you what they call little bump-ons. They're like little sticky coloured circular you know, raised dots, which can be used on a washing machine. So say if you have the traditional dial machines and you can't see, like, say, for example, how to do a hot wash and you've ended up doing a dark wash, or vice versa, and shrunk your individual jumpers, which I've done in the past, which is quite funny, really. But when I come to wear, it's shrunk. But those dots would then be placed on the machine. Sorry, I didn't mean to make you laugh there.
That's okay.
I've put a jumper on and it's up to my elbow. So those dots, I have two settings on my machine. You can also use it for your microwave. So put it on the number 5. And sometimes people find it very difficult as well to use the digital dial, especially on air fryers. So this is all person-centered. They will look at your home as well and just say, to declutter. Shoes are the worst thing, and, you know, rugs. So it might be just kind of small recommendations that can be made. And these things are actually provided by the local authority. But also with each and every one item is also to get them checked and maintained. And also you might want to tell the time. So a talking watch is brilliant. And again, it's a push button mechanism. And I know you can get the ones with the touch screen, but I had one and I called her Susie. She got stuck. So she kept saying 2 o'clock, 2 o'clock. So, which wasn't good because it was 6 o'clock. So, it's always good, but there are so many gadgets out there. And a lot of people actually have smart homes, which they use different apps. So you might want to invest in technology. And so, well, I can't use my phone anymore, or, you know, I need to know what app I can use for navigation. That is the important role of the rehab officers. So there's the mobility element and orientation, and also the daily living. And everything then starts to fit in. So ECHLA sometimes might refer on, and then they will actually have those skills. But it's learning new skills and tasks that you become engaged, because the biggest thing with visual impairment is isolation. Especially if you don't have that support mechanism, on the get-go.
I think one thing that's also worth mentioning, I ended up getting a Braille watch. It worked like a dream. They're not suitable for everybody, but if you are working and if you have a talking watch that keeps getting disruptive, a Braille watch might be a better alternative. Also, QTVI might be an important abbreviation to mention as well. I think it's qualified teacher visual impairment, am I correct?
That is correct. QTVIs are actually based at the Century team, and they are actually listed. There's a whole list of QTVIs that we have with the local authority. Now, they are actually specialist qualified teachers who work with a local authority and also with schools, with individual pupils who have actually been diagnosed either sight impaired or severely sight impaired. But it's also for children and families, even though they're not registered, that their eyes, cannot be corrected with lens corrective glasses. So if refraction doesn't work, they will still support them. Now, QTVIs actually help again. It's a person-centered approach. Now, when a child is actually diagnosed, one of our ECHLOs actually, who works within one of our hospitals, has close contact with QTVIs because they will look at, like, the early years as well. And as they start to grow and emerge as individuals and coping with their sight loss as well, and also trying to understand, there is also kind of sensory toys that might be used in the early years when they're infants, and QTVIs actually will then actually help support the individual in school to engage with the national curriculum, and also look at educational healthcare plan, which is absolutely crucial, which will be centered, again, person-centered for the individual's learning needs. Now, this could also be with looking at, Braille, learning to, to access technology and seeing what reasonable adjustments can be made. They also actually help with rehabilitation. And this could actually be mobility and orientation in the school. And obviously, we're all different, and different times of year affects our sight as well. And as the child grows up to adolescence, this work will be ongoing. And obviously everyone, you know, kind of will go to a school which might be just, a, you know, kind of for the visually impaired. And then when going on to college, the support will always be there. Now, QTVIs have been around a very, very long time, and their role is absolutely vital for the individual. So access to the curriculum, looking at rehabilitation for them, and that could be with the family and supporting the family throughout their early years and through adolescence as well, which is crucial. If something is actually taking longer for that individual person or child to do, then obviously the equipment will be needed as well. And sometimes our equipment that we have is quite specialised and not cheap. I'm sure you would agree with me there, wouldn't you? And some of the assistive technology as well, some of the touch typing programmes are free, but some of them are actually quite expensive as well. So it depends on who you tap into and where you access the information. A lot of adjustments are made within the classroom remit and you know, and allowing time for individuals to do the learning, which is important. But I know various organisations say that assistive technology and touch typing, and I've spoken to many colleagues of mine who've been blind since birth, and they said the first thing they learned was Braille and all touch typing, because we are of a generation of you know, artificial intelligence, and also you know, accessing the internet and everything else. It can be costly, but also knowing that there is support with other funding streams as well, that the QTVI will have their finger on the pulse with. And disability living allowance is another benefit that could be applied for to support the individual's needs as they're growing.
It's actually called PIP now. It's personal independence payment, or PIP. Easy to remember. Are there any other abbreviations that you feel are important that haven't yet been mentioned?
The other one that which is absolutely crucial to people who are, is LVA, low vision assessment, low vision dispensing competitions. Now, people find that even though they might have been discharged from hospital, or you know, that they can't do any more, magnification doesn't help, it's still absolutely important to get your eyes looked at on a regular basis. And it's looking at the overall health of the eye. I mean, I still go to a low vision dispensing optician within you know, my area in the Midlands. But it's important also to see what is available. And magnification, when I first started, I didn't understand what low vision meant. And it's for people who cannot read newspaper print with ordinary glasses. And low vision normally sometimes are in the hospital and also in the community. So where I work, we do have a low vision clinic. And it's crucial to get your eyes checked by an optician or your consultant if you're still under their care on a regular basis. It's looking at pressures of the eye and just to kind of ensure that nothing else sinister is going on with the overall health of your eye as well. And it's also looking at that would protect your eyes. For example, with low vision, it's not just about magnification. It's looking at protective, you know, shields or shades that you could have, little hints and trips that you can actually have, looking after your eyes and overall eye health, which is really, really important. And also, again, when people who are either 6 foot five or 5 foot five, they forget it's overhanging branches. It's like things immediately like hedges. And even if you're doing gardening, it's to protect your eyes with eyewear. And also because of the sunshine, UV filters and UVB filters, especially with monitors, is to also protect your eyes. Because even though you might not be able to see the screen, you're still absorbing those toxic rays that are not good for the eyes.
What about so people like me who have absolutely no vision whatsoever?
Well, we always say if your eyes have changed, I mean, I'm not qualified medic, so I have to kind of instill that on the get-go. But from my personal perspective, even though there might be no more they could do for me, I still have my annual checks with my consultant every year, because it's checked the pressures, it's checked to see if the retina or if there's any detachment or anything sinister going on with maybe with my optic nerve. Those tests that they do, which are quite invasive, but it's important to say that nothing has changed. I suffer with macular edema, which is secondary to the retinal dystrophy. And if that fluid starts to build up, any residual vision I've got left could go. So I always say to people, err to the side of caution. If things have changed with your eyes, which are out of the norm to what you experience, always go to your emergency accident or hospital within your area straight away. Do not delay. And it's important to get your eyes checked anyway. But that is my opinion. But that is down to yourselves as an individual. But it's always important to get them checked. Normally, for people who've got no visual issues and they just have lens correction, they say once every 2 years. But it depends on you, depends on your condition, and it also depends on how regular your consultant slash optician would want to see you. So always take on the medical professional's advice.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, isn't it? You know, if in doubt about anything, ask the consultant, ask your ophthalmologist, your optician, you know, any medical professionals who may have more of an answer than you do. I think that's really good advice. So thank you.
Absolutely important. Thank you. If somebody is actually listening to this podcast, and they might have been diagnosed many years down the line, and they're trying to manage, and if there's been deterioration, always seek help, always reach out, and always pick up the phone either to you, Retina UK, who do have a support line, or any other organisation locally that sit in within the authority. We're here to help you. Please do not sit at home worrying. Making that first decision is the first step to engaging with others.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Perm. It's been wonderful to have you.
Thank you for inviting me. I really, really have enjoyed myself. Thank you.
And thank you to all you lovely listeners as well. And I hope that you have taken something away from this podcast. There's been a lot of thought-provoking things that have been covered today. Take care.